All right, it is time for the Scoop. Scott Kaplan in for Mace today. And Scott, I'll start with this. College basketball is starting all over the country today. But there have already been over 150 college basketball games canceled or postponed because of COVID-19. Rick Pitino, who is attempting to rebuild his career at Iona, has an interesting thought. Pitino's been saying what he tweeted recently for over a month. Here's what he tweeted. Quote, "I'll say it again to anyone who will listen. Push the season back to March and then have May madness. Give the vaccine a chance. It's in the best interest of all involved." Scott, is Rick Pitino right?
Well, let me start with this. Did everybody realize that college basketball tipped off today? Did everybody know this? Was this like in your face? Were you aware? Because right now, I've got Oklahoma State 36, University of Texas Arlington 31. John, I don't know that I knew that college basketball was starting. And so I really am I'm a bit surprised, frankly, watching college football struggle the way it is to continue to field teams and games and cancellations all over. I'm sort of surprised that the NCAA, who very quickly after the NBA pushed the pause button, decided to blow out March Madness. I'm surprised they're going forward. And I kind of have to agree with Rick Pitino here that maybe what they should have considered doing was pushing things back a little bit.
What they care about more than anything else is getting the tournament played. And I think that if you play the tournament in May, it gives you a better chance to pull it off. So I actually agree with Pitino too. I think that would have been the best way to go. But when the NBA bubble happened, Scott, and they did such a good job and it went off basically without a hitch, I think it made everybody think big, thinking, right, well, if they can do it, we can do it. So the NCAA is going for it. The safer move, I'm with you, would have been to follow Pitino's lead and say, hey, let's just do it in May. Let's see. I'm rooting for it. I hope it all works out.
Hey, John,
but it's a little bit risky.
Speaking of Rick Pitino, I don't know if you realize this or not. So here he is, like you said, trying to rebuild his career at Iona, right? The little tiny school. He's been at the highest heights of college basketball and national champions at places like Kentucky.
Coach
and
of the Celtics at one point.
Right. I mean, and Rick Pitino has made an absolute fortune. And John, I've gotten to know Rick a little bit because he's an investor in my horse racing group. I know this is going to sound ridiculous, okay?
No, so, Mason and I used to own a horse. I know exactly what that's like, but go ahead.
Yeah, so Pitino comes into Del Mar during the summers, and he'll come up to Santa Anita at times, and he bought into our group. So I've gotten to know him just a little bit. You realize that before he decided to go to Iona, he was like a superstar in Greece.
Yeah, won the title over there.
Yeah, and they loved him. They adored him. And he wasn't really that into it. So this is a guy who must really, really, really love coaching. Because with all the money he's made and all the issues he's had, he doesn't mind continuing to put himself out there and like you said, try and rebuild.
All right, next one's to you.
All right, here goes. John, I'm gonna go in a different direction today. And I'm going to bring you some Thanksgiving thoughts here. I want to get your feelings on this. Here goes. So the government and the CDC has strongly urged all of us to not travel during Thanksgiving, to not have big family gatherings, to limit the number of households that you should host, to socially distant, to have Thanksgiving celebrations outdoors. So we've heard all of these, what I would call suggestions. I would pose it to you. Are you planning to abide by the suggestions of the CDC and of government officials?
Sort of. I'm going to, my mom lives in Orange County. I'm going down to see my mom, and we're celebrating with a family that we celebrate for. But the total number of people is 7. So with that, I think that would fall within the CDC guidelines are 10 or less, right?
Yeah, and 3 households, and that's it.
This is 2 households and 7 people. So am I following the guidelines or not?
Well, let me ask you this question. Is this because you're following the guidelines, or is this just the way Thanksgiving worked out this year?
A little of both. We probably would have gone a little bigger. My wife has family in Idaho and in Las Vegas, and normally they would come here and we'd have a much bigger deal. But we didn't even explore that when we knew nobody wanted to travel and nobody wanted to do it. And then when we planned everything, we said, how big do we want to go? and we intentionally kept it under 10.
Yeah.
So I think that the guidelines did have something to do with what we decided to do. What are you guys doing?
Well, first of all, my parents are both in Florida, darling, okay?
Okay.
And they live in Boca del Vista Phase 3, not Phase 4. And my parents have been quarantined. My father goes and plays pickleball, and my mother goes and does... My mother does water aerobics, okay? And so that's their activity. Otherwise, my mother's sitting on her computer playing on Facebook or solitaire or actually doing a crossword puzzle in a real newspaper. So my parents have been completely quarantined in a state where it's wide open.
I mean, I watched 10,000 people at the Ram game the other night.
Right. It's completely wide open in the state of Florida. So my parents are quarantined, so they're not coming here. I don't want them here, right? I'm not going there. I'm not getting on an airplane right now. So I am going to abide by it, but again, it's sort of not by plan. It's just the way my Thanksgiving worked out. And so I'm going to be going by the CDC guidelines, but not because I want to, just because it's the way it worked out.
Yeah. All right. It's to me. The 2021 Baseball Hall of Fame writers ballots came out last week. Both Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are in their ninth year of voting. So they have this year and one more year after this, then they're both off the ballot. Last year, each guy got 61% of the vote. You need 75% to get into the hall. They've crept up each and every year. Is this the year Bonds and Clemens get in? What do you think?
So my answer is, I don't know if this is the year they get in, but here's what they should get. They should get in. Both of these guys are Hall of Famers. Listen, Barry Bonds, let's look at the totality of his career. Okay, and Dodger fans don't want to hear this, and I understand because in baseball terms, you know, he's a villain. He's a bad guy. He's with the rival team, and he was juiced up, and he did all of these things. The fact of the matter is this. Barry Bonds was a great player when he was in Pittsburgh. He got all beefed up and blown up and juiced up when he got to San Francisco. He was still a great player. He became a great home run hitter. And I don't care if he was taking the sauce or he was doing it all natural, you still have to put bat on ball. For me, Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer. And the exact same thing goes for Roger Clemens. I get it. He's busted. He did it. But you know what? These guys were the best of their era. And you would say, you're driving around right now going, of course they were the best of their era. They were the most juiced up of their era. Okay, so was everybody else. That was the steroid era. For me, John, I'm not a baseball purist. You'll have to excuse me. Put those guys in the Hall of Fame.
I'm with you, Scott. Mason would be on the other side of this. And what's interesting is when we've had other Hall of Famers on, like the late, great Frank Robinson would come on with us, they wanted nothing to do with anybody who used PEDs. They felt really strongly about it. So if I had a Hall of Fame vote, I would have been voting for them each and every year. I think you just make it part of their story. Put it on his plaque. He was caught using PEDs. But, you know, A-Rod's probably not going to get in, and he hit 700 home runs. I mean, you can't just erase what these guys did for the game. I would not sweep under the rug their cheating, but I wouldn't keep him out of the hall either. Now, if Mason were here, he would shout us both down, saying that, you know, he is a baseball traditionalist, and he says, you know, you can't let anybody who cheated in. But we'll see. I mean, I have a feeling this may be the year they get in. We'll find out.
Does Steve want their numbers and statistics to be erased from the history books? Or
no, he just wants them to go away.
Mm-hmm.
He wants them to fade into the mist, I think. All right, next one's to you.
All right, you ready? So this morning, John, I'm listening to Keyshawn early this morning. And he and Jay Will and Zubin are all having a conversation. They're kind of putting it to all of their guests. And I, as I was driving around early this morning, I thought, okay, I have a very, very strong opinion about this issue that they're discussing right now. And here it goes. What is the better Thanksgiving pie? Pumpkin pie or sweet potato pie? John Ireland, which pie?
Which kind of pie guy are you? This question is an outrage. Pumpkin pie is the greatest pie ever. Pumpkin pie should be a year-round pie. But for whatever reason, we have pigeonholed it into Thanksgiving. And maybe if you have a family that's a little more understanding, they'll break it out at Christmas. Pumpkin pie is the most underrated pie of all time. It shouldn't even be in the same league, in the same conversation. The sweet potato pie is in the G League compared to pumpkin pie. The only answer to your question is pumpkin pie. What do you think?
Well, first I want to say to you that early this morning I was at Costco. It opens at 8:45 for the senior citizens, 10 a.m. for everybody else. I was worried about age discrimination. They were going to not let me in, but they let me in. They let me in. They have right now in Costco like millions of pies. Pecan right. pie, apple pie, pumpkin pie.
Yep.
I bought the pumpkin pie. It's gigantic, $5.99. It's like the size of a large pizza. It's unbelievable.
Oh, so great.
But I got to tell you something, John. I for many years, I worked with James Lofton, a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Yep.
And Dave Sims, who's the voice of the Seattle Mariners. And we traveled the country doing Sunday Night Football on Westwood One. Every time we went to New Orleans, James Lofton, who was the traveling secretary who dealt with all of the meals and the restaurants and everything that we did, James Lofton would make sure that every Sunday that we were in New Orleans, we went to a place that's legendary called Mother's.
Yeah,
Okay, so Mother's, that's the kind of place where you get grits. And it's also the kind of place where you always get sweet potato pie. I love pumpkin pie. I bought a pumpkin pie. I'm going to eat pumpkin pie tomorrow with and without whipped cream. But I got to say, I think sweet potato pie may be the better pie.
Oh, please. You're out of your mind. You're absolutely out of your mind. Sweet potato pie might be good. Go ahead. It can have its 15 minutes. Pumpkin pie is, this is, Lindsay, do you eat either one of these pies, sweet potato or pumpkin pie?
I love pumpkin pie. I'm not one of those crazy pumpkin spice people who want like pumpkin spice lattes.
Yeah, pumpkin ravioli, pumpkin bananas. Right. I know.
Pumpkin pie is delicious, mainly because my grandma always made the best pumpkin pie ever. But I'm not going to lie, I've never even tried sweet potato pie before.
Yeah, pumpkin pie cannot be beat. Pumpkin pie is the goat of pies. So it is. I have nothing against sweet potato pie, but don't come at me with X is better than pumpkin pie. Nothing's better than pumpkin pie at Thanksgiving.
Well,
I would eat a whole pie by myself. My wife went to Costco today. I hope she bought more than one pumpkin pie.
I had to get out of there, man, because I'll tell you, John, after a while, you know, you're in Costco, especially when a place opens up. Within 15, 20 minutes, it's the 4:05 on a Friday afternoon. You know, I got to get out of this place, man.
All right, coming up next, that's it for the scoop. Coming up next, we will get into what happened in college football last night. The college football rankings are out. And because this is a COVID season, they're kind of a mess. Heather Dinich from ESPN will join us. We'll explain what we're talking about next. Scott Kaplan in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Today, it's Scott Kaplan and Ireland as we roll towards Thanksgiving, and we're going to talk a little college football here. Last night, the college football playoff rankings came out for the first time. No surprises at the top. Alabama, number one, Notre Dame, two, Clemson, three, and Ohio State, four. But, Scott, there are going to be a lot of debates and a lot of arguments over what's happening below those four. And to help us make sense of all of it is Heather Dinich, who covers college football for ESPN. Heather, we really appreciate you doing this. I know you were up early to be on Get Up, and Thanksgiving is tomorrow. So thank you very much for making time for us. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay, so here's my first question. I'll use BYU as an example. BYU's 9-0. So I didn't think they'd be in the top four because their strength of schedule stinks. But they're 14th. Heather, I wonder how much we can blame BYU for this schedule. They're an independent. All those games got canceled. They left kind of scrambling at the beginning. I'll use them as an example, but there's other teams. There could be a Pac-12 team that goes undefeated. There could be, you know, Cincinnati. Should this have been the year that they went to 8? And did they even consider that when they were trying to kind of put together this COVID season?
Well, look, I think that it's really hard to answer that question fairly now because sure. I think all of this, the whole college football season, will be reviewed 10, 20 years from now. And I mean that sincerely because nobody knows exactly what the right thing to do is each week. And what they're doing now, each conference is relying on their medical advisors and their groups and their doctors and state and local governments because that's what we have right now in college football and what happens when you play in a pandemic. Now, they considered expanding as an experiment earlier. I want to say it was like a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott brought it up to the group at one of their CFP meetings, and there was some support for it, but not enough. And when you're talking about changing the entire postseason system, even if just for a fleeting year, you're talking about moving mountains. And that's not something that happens quickly. People have to remember that going from two teams to four teams took about 2 to 3 years. Yeah. And that was just in the logistics and planning and execution of it, right? We're not even talking about the debate that led to this system. So it's the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl and the Orange Bowl and contracts and all that kind of stuff. So it's easy to sit here and say, man, this would have been a year to expand it. And maybe it was. You know, it's just hard to say what's right when we're in the middle of a pandemic and each decision on its own can be asked that same question.
Yeah, and you know, Heather and John, I'll say this, that I don't have any sympathy for a BYU and their potential claim that they should be, you know, in the playoff, especially if they finish undefeated. They haven't, in my opinion, they haven't really played anybody. You know, John, you talk about BYU being an independent. I actually thought they were in Conference USA. You'll have to excuse me. When they play against UTSA and they play against, Western Kentucky.
Scott. Wait a minute. Heather, can we blame BYU for that this season? You know, normally if you schedule games years or two in advance and they're in their 11th year as an independent, normally we would say, okay, you guys kind of punked out and didn't play anybody. But this year they had a completely different schedule ready to go and it got kneecapped by COVID. Do you blame BYU for their schedule strength this year?
I don't think you can blame BYU any more than you can blame, say, Cincinnati for not playing Temple because it was canceled because of COVID. But what you can do is judge BYU at face value against the opponents it has right now. And that's the committee's job. And there have been times throughout the entire playoff system over the past 6.5 years where teams weren't able to play non-conference games. Somebody backed out of an agreement. And, oh, well, we were supposed to play Tennessee, but we wound up playing UT Martin. Well, the committee doesn't care who you were supposed to play. Right. They judge you against whatever school you wound up playing, and they don't care about the backstory behind it. And that's the same this season. But if you're going to hold BYU to that standard, then you've got to hold it across the board and say, well, you know, Washington couldn't play Washington State, but they're going to play Utah. So, you know, right. It's just people are getting games canceled left and right, and that's out of their control.
I agree with everything you just said, and that's what I'm saying, John, is that they didn't play anybody, so you're not penalizing them because they're an independent. That's their choice, and they couldn't get games scheduled. But by the same token, don't necessarily reward them when they didn't play a real schedule. And the other part of it would be this. That if you're a college football fan in this very crazy year, if we end up the way it is, Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, you've got the name brand schools. And I want to see those four schools. I don't have to want to watch BYU because I feel sympathetic because they went undefeated, but they didn't play anybody. The four schools at the top of the list, that's who people want to see, in my opinion.
Heather, it's the Pac-12. If Oregon or USC runs the table in the Pac-12, do they have a claim to get in? Or because they played fewer games than anybody else, they're canceling more games pretty much than any other conference. Are they the odd team out because of circumstance, even if they go undefeated?
Not necessarily. If there's an undefeated Pac-12 champion that looks like a top four team, that's the catch. That looks like a top four team, they will absolutely be considered. Now, fair or not, the more games you play, the more opportunities you obviously have to impress the selection committee. That matters. We see Oregon at, I don't have the list in front of me, I think they're at number 13 or 15 at the highest ranked Pac-12. That doesn't mean they can't move up. We have seen throughout the playoffs, once you punctuate your resume with a conference championship, that can change the entire playoff picture. Now, that being said, the Pac-12 has been missing an elite team, no matter how many games that they've played. And while Oregon has not looked the part of a top four team through its first three games, everybody has to remember, they're not in midseason form. It's Thanksgiving, but they're not in Thanksgiving form, right? I mean, think about how different college football teams look from when they open up against that FCS team or whoever it might be all the way to now during a typical season. You see so much growth and learning and teams get better. Remember USC when they started off with two losses and then by the end of the season, whoa, we were like talking about, hey, is this three-loss USC team one of the best teams in the country because they're playing so good right now? And that's missing. So they've got to close the gap much faster than usual, but I would not write them off until we see what they look like come Pac-12 Conference Championship Day.
Well, let me ask this question. Alabama is going to play Auburn this weekend. Notre Dame plays North Carolina. Clemson plays my alma mater, Pitt. Ohio State is playing Illinois. When you look at the top four teams, you think anybody could get knocked off this weekend?
I think Notre Dame can lose at North Carolina. That's the one I have my eye on. And anything can happen in the Iron Bowl, but it shouldn't. Nick Saban tested positive for the coronavirus. He's not even going to be on the sidelines. I still think they're at least two touchdowns better than Auburn this year. Three guys on their offense, Najee Harris, Mac Jones, Devontae Harris, they're all Heisman-worthy players. I think that it's going to be tricky for Notre Dame to win at North Carolina. If they lose and they still win the ACC championship, I think that they are still in the top four. But it gets a lot more dicey, obviously, if they split to Clemson and if they beat North Carolina and don't beat Clemson, I think there's a chance for both of them to get in. But I think that the SEC at the end of the day will have a better chance to put two teams in than the ACC.
Heather, if Clemson loses again, even if it's to Notre Dame, can they still get in? Can they get in with two losses? I mean, everybody wants to see them. Everybody knows they're the 800-pound gorilla. I'm sure the committee knows that they're going to bring in ratings. But if they lose to Notre Dame again, could they get in?
Well, a two-loss team has not gotten into the playoff yet. It's been close, but we haven't seen it. I think that goes back to your question. What does the Pac-12 champion look like? Are they undefeated? Yeah. What does Cincinnati look like? I mean, they're not going to play for 2 weeks because of COVID issues of their own. They just had their Temple game canceled. But they've got Tulsa, which just snuck into the committee's top 25. We went on the road against the top 25 team, you finish undefeated in the AAC. What do they do with the Bearcats? How high can they climb? So there are plenty of other options out there that might look better to the committee than a two-loss Clemson team that didn't win the ACC. But again, as we say here in the midst of a pandemic, I don't know, because the committee was kind of all over the map in their justifications of the first ranking between eye test and strength of schedule.
Yeah, it really is. It's unbelievable how I just wish they would have gone to eight, because this would have been the 1 year where you could say, we're just going to do it for 1 year.
Right.
Creative. But, you know, like you said, Heather, just getting these guys to agree on what to have for lunch is hard sometimes. So maybe we should just be thankful for what we get. Hey, Heather, most of all, thank you for doing this. Have a great Thanksgiving. Yeah. And hopefully we can catch up with you before the end of the season.
Sounds good. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys, too.
All right, there's Heather Dinich from ESPN. Scott, I just think that, you know, this was the 1 year, like, baseball kind of played with the rules. I wish college football would have done with it. You know, baseball said, we're going universal DH. We're sticking a runner on second base in the start extra. These are things they never would have been able to jam through in a regular year. But the pandemic gives you an excuse. We should have opened it up to, like, a mini tournament. I would have even been okay with 16. With four was you know, it just kind of,
Well, but you know, the thing is, like, baseball is in control of baseball. And you think the NCAA is in control of college football, but it's not, because it's the individual conferences that have made their own decisions. You know, John, you're talking about BYU, and I got to say, I have no sympathy for BYU. This was their choice. They didn't want to be part of the Mountain West Conference. By the way, couldn't blame them. They weren't exactly invited into the Pac-12 like Utah was. So I just feel like BYU decided they didn't want to be in a conference. They don't have the luck of the Irish. They don't have Notre Dame, who says, wait a second, we're an independent too. We could be screwed. No. The ACC will let you in for just this year because you play basketball there. So I have very little sympathy for BYU. The schedule that they've played is a freaking joke.
Yeah, it is. But I think like I said, all their games got canceled. All 11 of their games got canceled because everybody canceled non-conference games. It'll be interesting to see how that works out. All right, coming up next, Scott, my rant, my reaction to your question about pumpkin pie or sweet potato pie has drawn quite a backlash, and it's breaking on racial lines.
Oh, no.
I will explain next. Scott Kaplan in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's right. We're talking about pie. Mason in Ireland, Scott Kaplan sitting in for Mace. And our little backstory here, background. Matter of fact, Scott, let's take a minute and give some love to Cited, the website you created, because that's where we got this question. Explain to people who don't know what is Cited. And you can check it out for yourself at Cited.com. But Scott, you created it. You run it. What is it?
Okay, so first of all, I would encourage everybody, and thank you, by the way, to download the mobile app. If you're on iOS or if you're on Android, download the mobile app, Cited Debates. Here's what it is, John. It's a place where I heard you guys having this conversation last week about should all accounts on Twitter be verified, remember?
Right. Yeah, I think they should.
So do I. So the thing is that everybody expresses their opinions, or they debate, or they argue, or they name call, or whatever it is that they do on lots of different social media platforms, but you never get anything from it other than a lot of anxiety. We actually are a social media platform where you get rewarded for your opinions. So you win a debate, you earn points, you move up the leaderboard, and at the end of the week, you win Amazon gift cards. We actually start tomorrow, Thanksgiving, all the way through Christmas Eve, a debate of the day where you can win a $25 Amazon gift card. I realize, John, it's not like the money that's going to change your life, but during the holidays.
What are you kidding? I order from Amazon every day. I'll take anything I can get from that.
Absolutely. We literally email you the gift cards right away. So if people download the Cited Debates app, they can win $25 gift cards every day tomorrow through Christmas. And it's just a lot of fun. You know, people compete with their opinions all the time, but you never have a winner or a loser on Twitter. On Cited, you have a winner and a loser. You know the stats, which side won, which side lost, who had the most likes, who had the best arguments. So, dude, I've been at this for like 3 years. You ever see the show Silicon Valley on HBO?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, I have lived in my...
Well, good for you, man. I'm rooting for you, and it's a great idea. And so today, Scott asked me a question that kind of originated on Cited. On Thanksgiving, what is the better pie? They were kicking it around this morning on Keyshawn's show, and I went on a impassioned rant that pumpkin pie is it has no rival. Pumpkin pie is the greatest holiday pie of all time. I'm one of those people that thinks pumpkin pie should be served and available 12 months a year. But the only time I seem to eat it, Scott, is on Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's it. I would like to start a movement to make pumpkin pie a year-round delicacy. But on Cited, on your debate site, most of the people agree with me. So far, the debate's going on for another 2 or 3 days, but so far, 65% of the people have responded in favor of pumpkin pie, and just 35% for sweet potato pie. But here's what I didn't expect. It's starting to break on racial lines. I got a text from my buddy Kelvin Washington. Kelvin, former talk show host on this radio station. You can now see him on Spectrum here on TV. One of the great guys of all time. Kelvin, who is African-American, says, "Hey, man, you got to try sweet potato. It's the black folk pumpkin. You might get converted. Similar in taste, but more rich versus the spice of pumpkin." Then we heard from one of our listeners, Philip Olive, also African-American. Philip says, "John, pumpkin pie is largely a white thing. Black people eat sweet potato." So is that something I missed, Scott, that this is it's in the black culture to have sweet potato pie? And that's why I if this were an election, I would have a very difficult time getting the black vote.
So I told the story that James Lofton, Pro Football Hall of Famer, I mean, an all-time great wide receiver.
James, great guy.
Yep, yeah. From L.A., Green Bay Packers, Buffalo Bills. I mean, an all-time, at one time, a Raider player as well. An all-time great. And Dave Sims, who is the play-by-play voice of the Seattle Mariners. And I said that the three of us would go to this place in New Orleans called Mother's. And that's where they introduced me to sweet potato pie. And so these two gentlemen, both African-American, I'm the Hebrew brother. I walk in with these guys and they're like, "Dude, you got to get some sweet potato pie." And I'm like, "Nah, I don't really think sweet potato pie is something I really, I think it's sweet potato. Nice. I have a nice sweet potato. I'll open it up. Maybe a little barbecue sauce on it. I eat the skin. It's nice." They're like, "No, sweet potato pie, you got to try it." And I'm telling you right now, sweet potato pie is bomb. That's all I'm saying right now.
All
John.
Right. So I may have to circle back and give sweet potato another chance. I've had it. I still believe nothing compares to pumpkin pie, but now that I know it's the preferred pie, I work in the NBA, Scott. The NBA is predominantly black. I don't want to blow that constituency, so I will try sweet potato pie and give it its fair due before I go on another pumpkin pie rant.
Go ahead. I want to ask you a quick question. Are you following the story this week about Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys and him sledgehammering watermelons?
Yeah, Lindsay brought it up earlier in the week on Radio Tinder.
Yeah, and then Shannon Sharp going off on that? Did you hear that part of it?
Was Shannon upset because he was playing into a stereotype or what?
He said that is so racist and how dare he? And I can't believe that the African-American players on the team didn't revolt. And I'm like, dude, that's a comedian, Gallagher, who made his entire career smashing watermelons, and we thought it was kind of funny, and McCarthy was attempting to be motivational, and whether it worked or not is another question, but really, I try and be as sensitive right now as anybody, because I know how America is. I mean, we're kind of walking on eggshells around each other, but I didn't think that was considered a racist move.
Right. Well, what's hard is that we're not in the aggrieved group in this case.
Yes, fair
so,
enough.
So, Shannon, who I think is really good on TV, he is in the group that was offended by it. So it's hard for us to tell people, I've learned this, doing radio for 25 years, that it's hard for me as a white guy to tell black people what they should and shouldn't be offended by. But at the same time, I see your point that I think Mike McCarthy was just playing off of that. I mean, Lindsay, didn't you actually say when you brought this up earlier that he stole it specifically from Gallagher?
Yeah, that's what he said. He said it all started with Gallagher's comedy shtick.
Because of that, I mean, I was surprised that Lindsay and other people knew who Gallagher was. Lindsay knew because her dad used to watch Gallagher videos, but I didn't think that's where Mike was going, but who am I to say if Shannon thinks that would have struck a nerve? Maybe it did. So maybe Michael stopped doing it. All right. Speaking of Radio Tinder, it's coming up next. Lindsay's got a bunch of stuff she wants Scott and I to react to. We'll tackle all that next. But first, I want to remind you, we are giving away a new car. It's a 2021 Mazda CX-5 Sport with $1,000 in the glove box from Culver City Mazda, so you can take a road trip on us. There are only two virtual keys left in the 710 ESPN month of giving. We're giving away both keys today. Will LaVenture in Huntington Beach got his yesterday. Get yours today. Lindsay, do I have this right? We're giving away one of the keys in the 5 o'clock hour and one of the keys in the 6 o'clock hour?
Yep, that's right. So you got to be listening both hours.
Oh, and then you also have to be listening next hour to Scott and I, because we will give out the destination of the day at some point during the 3 o'clock hour. Write it down, then listen to Sinano and LZ in the 5 o'clock hour, and today in the 6 o'clock hour, because we're going to give away the final two keys today when Sal Gonzalez gives you the cue to call. When you hear it, be caller number 7 with the correct destination of the day, and you can win one of those two remaining virtual keys that could start the brand new 2021 Mazda CX-5 Sport with a grand in the glove box, $1,000 in the glove box. It's all on us. It's part of the 710 ESPN month of giving. So basically, just don't turn your radio off between now and 8 o'clock, because we are giving you all the details you need to win a brand new Mazda. Coming up next, Radio Tinder. Scott and I will tackle everything on Lindsay's list next, 710 ESPN. All right, let's get right to it. Lindsay's got stuff she wants Scott and I to comment on. Lindsay, what do you got?
All right, the eagerly anticipated Mike Tyson comeback fight against Roy Jones Jr. taking place over this weekend will reportedly not even be scored, and a winner will not be announced. Obviously, this is a little important to know before you shell out $49.99 for the pay-per-view broadcast that's going to be on Triller on November 28th. So this is something that just kind of came to fruition over the past couple days, at least as the first I'm hearing about it, and I've followed this pretty closely. Do you guys think, are a lot of people going to pay $50 for an exhibition fight that won't even have an actual winner declared? Swipe left or swipe right?
I will swipe right on this, Scott. I think people love boxing. They love Mike Tyson. I think even though there's not going to be a winner, people will buy it. What do you think?
I'll swipe left. And I will say that no one is going to buy this because, because honestly,
it's Mike Tyson, like, man.
I love Mike Tyson. I love him. I saw his one-man show. I couldn't believe he was up there pulling this thing off. I love Mike Tyson. I thought he was going to win every fight he ever was in. But Mike Tyson, as good as he looks, it's not even Mike. I feel bad. I can't watch Roy Jones. I have to look away because I think he's just so messed up from boxing from all these years. I'm not buying it.
You know, we have a way to test this theory. Jorge, our board operator, George Briones, is a giant fight fan, much like my buddy Michael Thompson, who, George, you normally buy most fights, correct?
I do. Yes, I
will
do.
You be buying the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones extravaganza tomorrow or Friday
no
night?
No way.
Why?
It's just not, I mean, no score, no winner, like, what for?
Yo, between me and you, Jorge, I'm also a big, I watch like every one of these pay-per-view boxing matches, UFC fights, whatever. Between you and I, nobody's listening here. Are you gonna secretly download it and like get like the live stream?
I'm texting. By the way, if Bergman were here, Bergman is the biggest freeloader of TV content ever. He'll know how to get it for free.
I know how to get it. I have a link that's right saved on my desktop where I get UFC.
There you go. See?
It's how I watch the Browns games.
To Bergman's credit, while I drag him through the mud, I have to admit that there are certain times where I'll be looking for something and they'll say, you don't have this in your package. I'll send a text to Bergman. And within 5 minutes, I'm watching it some way, somehow. George, let's put it that way. If Lindsay or Greg provides you a way to watch it without paying, would you watch it?
Yeah, that changes things. Yeah, I wouldn't drop the $50. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll send
you
the link because I'm definitely going to be watching.
All right, let's do it.
All right, I'm sending this. I'm texting Michael right now, asking him. Michael buys literally everything that has to do with boxing.
He actually tweeted about it that he's buying it.
Oh yeah, he's going to buy it for sure.
Oh, is he? Okay, I asked him.
So things like this, the reason why I don't feel bad getting it like this one for free, because it's going to be all over the place. But Mike Tyson himself is getting $10 million for this fight. So I don't feel too bad taking a couple bucks out of his pocket. That's all I'm saying.
$10 million.
So somebody asked me the other day if I would get in the ring with Tyson and take a punch for $1 million.
Oof. What's your answer?
I said I think it would kill me. But here's what I was thinking, Scott. Could I... Realistically, we're about the same age, me and Tyson. I think he might be like, how old's Tyson, George? Do we know?
I think he's 53, 52.
All right, so I'm 57. So I got maybe 5 years on him. Could I, Scott, get a glove on the punch? In other words, so the bell rings, I go to the middle. I try and anticipate where this punch is coming from, mm-hmm. and if I could even block it partially, mm-hmm. I then take a dive and pretend I'm out.
Okay, that reminds me of what Michael Spinks did.
But how risky would that be? Would I survive it, or would I be dead?
No, I think you could handle it, and I think $1 million, you know, if you held out for a little bit more, it would they'd probably still give you the money. And it would be worth it. I really do. I think you could, one punch from Tyson, whether he hits you in the head or in the ribs.
Well, if he hits in the head, I'm dead.
No, so, he's not going to kill you. You know, you get a concussion.
I would let him go full Drew Brees on my ribs. One punch, he'd break 11 ribs. It'd be very ugly. But $1 million could go a long way to paying my medical bills. So I would seriously consider it.
Is there any time in advance of the fight, just by the way? Because if so, maybe I put on 30 or 40 pounds. He punches me in the stomach. I don't feel it as much.
That's actually a decent strategy, but the fight's on Friday, so I think you're out of time.
Yeah.
Linz, what else you got?
All right. An Amazon delivery driver has gone viral after a doorbell camera captured the incredible moment when she followed a customer's delivery instructions during the drop-off. TikTok user Mohawk Dog used yellow tape to mark off an area on the floor in perfect view of the camera, sticking a note to the wall reading, "Amazon deliveries, let's play. Stand in yellow square, look at camera, and do a 5 to 10 second dance for TikTok." So the footage from her video camera showed that three of the drivers came and go without doing anything at all. One just completely avoided the square altogether, and another one kind of wagged his finger at the camera saying, like, no, I'm not doing it.
Right.
So I want to ask you guys, let's pretend for a second you're the Amazon delivery driver. Would you do the dance for some goodwill here? Swipe left or swipe right?
Wait, how does me doing the dance equal goodwill?
I don't know. It's just something fun that somebody wants to do to put on TikTok. Like,
Scott, you're
going to
have, as I've said many times, somebody's going to need to explain TikTok to me. I don't get, like the whole cranberry skateboard Fleetwood Mac thing. Yeah, I have no idea why that went viral. Why guy riding a skateboard on the back of a truck and singing Dreams got 20 million hits. Yeah, we've all had the ability to shoot short videos. Matter of fact, Lindsay, wasn't there another app before TikTok?
Wasn't it called Musical.ly?
That you could shoot a short video and just post it to the site? And didn't hit and TikTok
did?
There
was Vine, but the reason why Vine struggled was because they couldn't figure out how to monetize it, which is something that TikTok did. Mm. So I think nobody really knows the reason why things go viral. They just kind of do. And a lot of it has to do with the younger kids. You know, teenagers, 13 to 21 or whatever, which is TikTok's main demo, they kind of decide what goes viral, and there's really no reason why.
Let me tell you something.
As somebody who has had many moments go viral in my career, and not in a good way, adding one more to the list would probably be not a very good career move. Scott, would you dance for the camera if you were an Amazon delivery guy?
So I probably would, because I'd want to show off the moves. I'm in the holiday spirit. You know, I could move. You asked the question, why do people use TikTok? I just went onto it to try and catch up to what Lindsay's talking about. And there's this girl who does the splits, and she's got these short shorts, and then she starts twerking. And I'm like, okay, that's why. That's why people are here. And then I find the next video is my daughter who's at her job, and she's doing a TikTok video at her job. Like, so she's, and by the way, she doesn't work at a dance studio. She works at a clothing store. And so, why is everybody on TikTok? This thing has blown up. It's exploded. I would dance, John Ireland. How about you?
I don't think so. I think that although it could remove, if you Google me now, if you Google like John Ireland, hey, Lindsay, have you ever done this? Google
John
Ireland make.
I've Googled you to see the whole makeup thing. I think we've all done the makeup thing.
All right. So if that's the first thing that comes up, maybe if I did this, it would replace that as the number one viral video. And so I'm now reconsidering.
I think you're thinking way too far into my hypothetical question.
Yeah, I probably am, but that's what these are for. What else you got?
What should I Google? Right. Hold on, John Ireland, what?
Makeup.
And I should Google that?
It'll be self-explanatory.
Oh,
Scott.
Here we go.
You'll laugh out loud.
That was circa 2004. No, later than that. Maybe like 2011 when I was putting on makeup to do a TV hit. And didn't realize that I was on camera. And then you'll see at the end of it, Scott, when I realize I'm on camera, I've got a look on my face like I am so busted. And that went all over. I was number one on the ESPN, not top 10. Jay Leno picked it up and ran with it. I had my 15 minutes of fame based on that clip.
I love it.
Lindsay, what else you got?
All right, speaking of delivery, a customer whose takeaway went missing was sent a picture by the delivery driver showing that it had, in fact, been left on the doorstep, but of her neighbor, by mistake, of course. So when she walked over to retrieve it, the food was gone, so she decided to leave an angry note in response. She attached the picture and wrote, "Hi, neighbor, I saw that you received my food. I hope it's sitting well in your belly. I was really looking forward to that pasta. My delivery driver made a mistake, but it would have been pretty simple for me to go outside and see it on your step instead. Also, I know you have it because the driver provides pictures upon delivery." She posted about this dilemma on social media, and many criticized her for her passive-aggressive note and said they would have taken the takeaway if it landed on their doorstep, too. Would you eat your neighbor's food if it accidentally wound up on your doorstep? Swipe left or swipe right.
This has never happened to me. Mm-hmm. I've never had somebody's food delivered by mistake. It's an interesting ethical question, Scott. I think I would try and find and like look on the box or look on the delivery slip. I know the names of all my neighbors to see if I could deliver it to the right person. But let's say it didn't have that somebody just literally dropped a bunch of food off at your door with no wrong address. Scott, would you eat it?
Well, that's the first part I'm thinking to myself. Like, okay, who dropped this food off? Now, it looks good and it smells good, but I don't know who dropped this food off. I don't know where this food has been. I don't know what's in this food. Am I going to eat this food from...
Especially in a pandemic?
Right. Now, the other thing I was thinking was, am I going to walk around to all my neighbors, knock, 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 hey, did you guys order this? No. Okay. Knock, knock, knock. Hey, did you order this? And then, if nobody ordered it, can I then eat it?
No, I wouldn't eat it, Lindsay. I Scott's asking all the right questions. I wouldn't.
So, well, in this lady's situation, she's right that, like, I guess most of these delivery services nowadays, they have a picture of the front step. So assuming you don't live in, like, an apartment building where everybody's door looks exactly the same, you should be able to just I would leave it out there and assume that somebody's going to take it. This happened to me, I want to say, like, 6 months ago with some groceries. And the groceries were all kinds of stuff I never would have eaten to begin with, but it was right when the pandemic started and I was like, oh man, the delivery driver obviously accidentally left somebody's groceries outside my door. So I moved them out like in plain view in the hallway so somebody could see that their groceries ended up at my door instead. And I gave it until like the next morning and they were still out there. So then I just put them in the common area because I didn't want them. At that point, if it would have been like 12 hours, I would have just taken and eaten it. But, you know, I think you got to give it like a couple hours and see if somebody comes to get it. They're expecting it, right?
Yeah, I know. Because it's food, because it's something you eat, I think I would probably pass.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Situation. All right, that's it for Radio Tinder. Coming up next, we'll talk a little NBA basketball. Eric Pincus is going to join us. A lot has happened. And here's a question. Is it over? Are a lot of these basketball moves still to come? We'll get into that with Eric next. Mason in Ireland, Scott Kaplan in for May, 710 ESPN.